This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Senate clerks spent the night reading the entire pandemic relief bill out loud. Why did this happen, and what are the next steps to pass the legislation? Plus, lawmakers will have another task to tackle soon: how to deal with our aging roads, bridges, and tunnels.
These are enormously expensive projects all over the country that will require big political debate about what gets funded, how you pay for it.
We'll look at the administration's plans to fix the country's infrastructure. And today, we'll be getting the monthly jobs report. Will some professions still have a place in the future?
There's going to have to be a skill shift. People are going to have to be trained or look for jobs in different areas than they had before.
It is Friday, March 5th. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. Debate on the Biden administration's $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill is moving forward after Senate Democrats made a series of adjustments related to student loans, infrastructure, and other areas.
Given such term in Section 316B of the Employee Retirement Income Security Act.
That's the voice of a staff member, one of many who read the entire 628-page bill aloud. The move was prompted by Republican Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. He said he was doing it to highlight in part what he called an obscene amount of money. The House will need to approve the updated version of the bill before it goes to President Biden for his signature. We are reporting exclusively that top advisors to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo pushed state health officials to strip data from a July report about COVID-19 deaths in nursing homes. According to people with knowledge of the report's production, aides and health officials focused only on residents who died inside long-term care facilities, leaving out those who died in hospitals after becoming sick in nursing homes. Those changes resulted in a significant undercount of the death toll attributed to facility residents. State officials said Thursday that the governor's advisors advocated against including data on out-of-facility deaths because they had concerns about its accuracy. Pope Francis is beginning a four-day trip to Iraq amid security and public health concerns. Our Vatican correspondent, Francis X. Rocha, is traveling with the Pope.
This is the first international trip for the Pope in more than a year. He's been grounded by the pandemic, and he's decided finally, evidently, that he's had enough and that he needs to go to Iraq, support the Christians there, and reach out to Muslims, as he's done in visits to 9 Muslim-majority countries before Iraq. So that's a big theme of his papacy as well. But he's really going to support the Christian minority there that has dwindled since the U.S. invasion in 2003.
The Pope is expected to take in 6 cities, including a mass at a soccer stadium. And former President Donald Trump will remain suspended from YouTube until, quote, the risk of violence has decreased. YouTube CEO said the company still sees a risk of violence, citing recent warnings given by Capitol Police about a potential plot by an unidentified militia group to breach the building. The video sharing platform had suspended Trump in the wake of the Capitol riot for violating its policies against content it believes could incite violence. Representatives for Trump didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. Chinese leaders said they would target GDP growth of 6% or more this year. It's a relatively modest goal, but shows continued optimism after the economic damage seen around the world during the pandemic. We may see some growth when the February jobs report is released today by the Department of Labor. Markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff joins me now. Hi, Caitlin.
Hey, Mark.
So, Caitlin, even if we see some gains, why is this still a challenging economy?
Yeah, so we have the jobs report coming out. Economists are expecting that we'll add about 210,000 jobs, but you know, that's still a fraction of what was lost in March and April of last year when the pandemic was really, you know, at its beginning and people didn't know what to expect. And so the ability for a lot of businesses to rehire people that they had let go or people who had no choice but to leave the workforce because they had to take care of an older parent or young child, it's just, you know, really challenging to see how quickly that winds up recovering. You know, we're still down about 10 million jobs from what we had lost then. So while things are on the right track, there's still a while to go.
So we may see some hiring, but for the hardest hit sectors like retail, for example, are we seeing any growth?
Yeah, so you're seeing some rehiring, but most of it has been in different parts of the economy. So a lot of the stores that had let people go haven't, you know, really picked up hiring again. You're even seeing some retailers like Disney saying that they're going to close some stores because they're seeing a shift to online shopping because of the pandemic. And so even if we see some more rehiring, it's not going to be enough to meet the number of jobs that had been lost. And so because of that, you know, there's going to have to be a skill shift. People are going to have to be trained or look for jobs in different areas than they had before, or we might see some changes just to workforce participation.
Caitlin Ostroff on our markets team. Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
Just ahead, the process of fixing the roads we drive on every day. What's next in the plans to improve America's infrastructure?
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
One of the big campaign promises by the Biden administration, a $2 trillion infrastructure package. A proposal is expected to be sent to Congress once a COVID-19 relief bill is passed. Yesterday, President Biden met with members of the House to discuss his plans, but if history is any guide, these efforts to essentially rebuild and revive parts of the country can be a lofty political challenge. The Journal's Ted Mann has been reporting on this issue. He joins me now. Ted, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Ted, here's the thing about infrastructure. We all use roads, bridges, and tunnels, yet these infrastructure packages can be difficult to get through Congress. Is anything different now?
The only thing that's different, some lawmakers and politicians would say, is that the infrastructure we have is increasingly decrepit. It's a truism in Washington that infrastructure is bipartisan, but you can just look at how infrequently major investment gets through to see that it's not as easy as people make it sound.
So we saw some investment during the Obama administration, but that was several years ago. You alluded to the conditions of our roads and bridges. Is the country in okay shape, or are there some real serious needs?
You know, the construction industry would say, no, we're not. The American Society of Civil Engineers puts out an annual report card that is always dire. The most recent one, I believe, is a C-minus grade. So that's their view of the condition of the roads, of the bridges, of the dams in the country. So no, it's not, is the short answer. The other thing is Joe Biden and some of the other candidates for president I've been talking about how we have infrastructure needs related to what is coming. Just look at the power grid in Texas and the threats posed by climate change. The same is true on the West Coast. The same will be true for low-lying areas in the East as the sea levels rise. And all of our built facilities will need to be hardened. So there's both the matter of fixing what we've already got and building the things we're going to need for the future. These are enormously expensive projects all over the country that will require big political debate about what gets funded, how you pay for it.
You mentioned the power grid concerns. I think often people refer to infrastructure just strictly as tangible things like road projects. But these days, technology is a big part of our infrastructure. And for example, in some places, internet access is not so good. What other areas could see focus?
Well, rural broadband definitely will be a key part of this debate. If anything is going to happen on infrastructure, it's impossible to imagine it not having a big rural broadband component. That's because Biden will want some Republican votes if he can get them, even if he's doing something entirely with Democratic votes through a budget reconciliation. He will still have centrist Democrats from rural areas whose constituents say that they are not as well served with the internet as those of us who live in cities are. So that's going to be a part of a bill if one happens at all. It's also true that there are just unsexy infrastructure things that need to be worked on. Witness the condition of Flint, Michigan and their water system. There are aging water systems all over the country, and no one wants to see it get to as dire a condition as that did. The problem with that is it's not a ribbon that any politician really cares to cut if you're fixing the sewers, but it still has to get done.
And finally, Ted, there is this lingering question, how do we pay for it? The thought of raising the gas tax, for example, could be contentious. What's the fiscal reality of this all?
Well, as we said in the story, you know, Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, was 11 years old the last time they raised the federal gas tax. I was 12. So it's been a long time, and it's still stuck at this level that is not sufficient to maintain the funding in the Highway Trust Fund, which is what that gas tax is for. There is some movement on this. You have labor support for raising the gas tax, including from Teamsters, you know, whose members are driving trucks. You have the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, about as rock-ribbed a conservative institution as you can imagine, which came out years ago saying that we ought to raise the gas tax and slowly index it to inflation. So there is some political wiggle room here if Biden and members of Congress decide here's one area where we can start raising some revenue to pay for big investments. But it will be a bigger conversation than just the gas tax. They will have to think about various transportation-related grant programs and whether those should still be structured as they are or whether they should change based on the way the needs are changing. And then there will be some members of Congress, particularly on the left, who will say, look, we don't insist on a pay-for to do lots of big expensive things like, you know, wars. This is something that is just as important. We ought to just start building and we'll figure out how to pay for the debt when the debt comes due.
Ted Mann, the beginning of the infrastructure discussion. Ted, appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
And finally, companies hire thousands of business school graduates every year only to spend months catching them up on the specific demands and skills of the job. To ensure new graduate hires are ready from the start, or to make sure existing employees have the skills to move on to bigger roles, some of the biggest professional services firms like PricewaterhouseCoopers and KPMG are partnering with business schools to customize degrees. Our business education reporter, Patrick Thomas, has more.
For the students, this is a chance to work with a possible future employer, and in some of these programs, your tuition is covered, your expenses are covered. This could be a free degree. In the case of PwC, this first 40 students who are going to be enrolled in this test program, they'll have tuition covered. They'll get paid for PwC project work. They'll even get some limited benefits. In EY's case, they're training their current employees more and gives them a chance to maybe move up the ranks more.
KPMG launched a program comparable to PwC's in 2016. The firm's Master's in Accounting program integrates data and analytics skills training into traditional accounting courses and uses the firm's own software and technology in the classes. And that's what's news for Friday. We're back tonight with a new show. Until then, you can check in with us on WSJ.com and the Journal app. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal. Have an excellent weekend, and thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.